Welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, September 6th. Our 800 number, 1-800-524-3604. Our email address, midday@sdpb.org. Our panelists today, Mech Guru Joel Brovelite, NineClouds Bro Founder John T. Meyer, and Jeff Litterick, a Technology Integration Specialist and Peer, joining us today. A reminder, if you'd like a list of the links that we talk about on today's show, well, you know where to go, facebook.com/techradio. Of course, this is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio as well, 1-800-524-3604, the number, and our email address, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Joel Brovelite, what is that incredibly cute thing that you're playing with?
I know, isn't it
so cute?
It's darling. And these have been out a while. I don't. It's just the first one that I've owned. I should say owned, but it's actually my wife's. My wife doesn't use a computer. She just uses a tablet, and has since the original iPad. Now she uses an iPad Mini, and you know. Every once in a while, she'll need to type something that's a little longer than you might want to do with an on-screen keyboard. So I had seen this. A friend of mine was using it when I was out of town and on a full-size iPad, and I was very impressed with how it latched on. It's a keyboard for your iPad or iPad Mini. I think I've either posted a picture of it on Facebook, or I'm going to. And it latches on. And holds on using the just using tension, and then as you close it, the magnets in it in iPad 2 on up senses that you've closed it and turns it off. And the keyboard is very typable. It's Bluetooth, and actually had it now since I don't know about 3 weeks, and have yet to charge it. So
and we're still talking. I mean, if you've seen. Is the iPad Mini the same thickness as an iPad? It is, right?
It's a slightly thinner. Okay. Slightly thinner.
So even with this keyboard attachment, we're talking less than an inch. It's probably about an inch thick.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a very, very thin novella.
Yeah, when I walked into the studio, I thought that you had like the smallest laptop I've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's very clever because you know, the keyboard itself is backed with aluminum. And has a white frame.
Yeah, matches well. Yeah,
matches the iPad pretty well. Yeah. I know there's a few manufacturers of those out there.
Zag, 2Gs.
Yeah, Zag. Right. There's another manufacturer that actually makes it so it's kind of your Windows type tablet where the screen would flip around and you'd have the keyboard on the back and.
Sure, that kind of goofy. Yeah.
Right. So for like you know $79 to $99. Seems a little expensive for a keyboard, but yeah. One of the upsides I didn't think about until afterwards is really you don't need a case because you're totally protecting the glass on the front of it with a kind of layer of aluminum and a layer of plastic. So, you know, depending on how scratch prone you are, I mean, it's just a really nice little
It's really
package.
Not that much more expensive than a decent case.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then
yeah.
You're getting a keyboard out of it as well, so you get the protection.
And you could do what I did and make a case out of duct tape.
Yeah, that is great, too.
So
I've seen that before.
Yeah, I mean, I'd knock out some emails on that. I probably wouldn't, you know, write a research paper or anything
totally.
Like that. Your fingers
Although,
are a little
this is on the
cramped.
Mini. The one I tried for the full-size iPad was, you know, I think almost as good as my MacBook Air, maybe not quite as roomy.
Sure.
Of course, there's no mouse on it, no trackpad, nor should there be because you can't use a trackpad on
the iPad. You just touch, right?
Well, it was interesting watching you use that because you forget that you have both options.
Like right,
you were typing, filling that form in, and then instead of hitting enter, you touched the screen on submit.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting.
I didn't even really
trick
think about
your mind,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say is I totally expect, and I've said this for about 9 months, maybe even a year now, I totally expect Apple to, not just Apple, everybody to basically blend the tablet and laptop experience
Absolutely.
To where this is kind of the norm.
You know what's cute?
Well, it's like talking about your daughter's, what, five?
Yeah.
Like
six. Yeah.
Yeah, like that generation, 10 and, well, maybe like 8 and under, 7 and under, they are used to touching things.
Yeah,
like,
every time she comes near my computer, I start to panic because she just thinks you touch everything.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you?
That's
if
so
you
cute.
Were her?
Watching adults and kids touch laptop screens thinking that they're going to do something.
Yeah. Well, and it's cute, except for it'll be so antique when, you know, it's like that Star Trek IV, if you remember, when Scotty goes and they're back in, you know, 1985 or whatever they are. He comes back and he starts talking to the computer.
Picks
and the computer
the
doesn't answer. And yeah. They're, like, weirded out by it. And
yeah, outside
like,
of, like,
oh,
designing,
I
don't know why you'd ever use a mouse anymore. But
yeah, yeah. Unless you need to be real precise. But even then, I would venture a guess you'd be even more precise with a pen.
Sure.
I know
yeah,
I
that's,
am.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I know I am.
Anyway, I'll just say the fit and finish appears very nice on
yeah.
that. And like I said, sometimes you're going to spend more on a case than you are for that. So
yeah, especially really good case.
Definitely sure. a nice option for those looking for a little bit of an input for your iPad Mini or your iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Nice little option there. I'll have to take a look at that. It'll actually be slimmer than the case I have it in right now. So thanks.
Yeah, and we're just 4 days away from more Apple news. September 10th.
September 10th is the big time. And what are we expecting there?
I think it's going to be all phone all the time. I think there will be some phone announcements. The rumor has it that they might release two phones, not one phone. So a lower cost, kind of a low-end market iPhone with the rumor has it being plastic, maybe even in colors.
You kind of kiboshed me earlier in the year when I brought that one up.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it wasn't my idea.
Oh, that
I just read the rumors.
That it would be in colors?
Well, that and that they would just make a cheaper phone.
Oh, really? I said they wouldn't do that?
Well, definitely the colors. I thought
yeah.
you were kind of
the colors
you
thing,
were skeptical.
This is what flipped me off. Flipped me over on my opinion on colors.
It's a Steve Jobs flipping you off.
Yeah, right. That's happened before. Is that I think that they're going to get rid of the iPod Touch. No rumors have said this. This just seems logical to me. They're going to get rid of the iPod Touch and replace that with the iPhone, the lower-end iPhone, that will do everything that it will do, plus it'll be a phone, and get more phones into people's hands. You know, that price point for the iPod Touch is in that $200 range, which is kind of what they really need to get retail, $200, $300. To get more phones into people's hands, you know, retail.
I think this phone will be like $150.
Yeah, well, that could be, but you know, here's the thing: as soon as a phone comes out that will do everything your iPod will do, their iPod Touch sales will just tank. Because why would you buy one of those when you can buy a
sure.
phone? So I think.
But Jobs and Apple have never been scared to cannibalize themselves. I mean, he always his famous quote was
for sure.
cannibalize or be cannibalized.
For sure. But I mean, you can cannibalize your own sales right up to the point where you're making the exact same device without.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know how they work that pricing out and keep that model in. But I think the biggest news that that's already been announced and we already know about is the iOS 7, I think, will go for download. And all of the iOS updates, which is your operating system for, you know, we're looking at it right now in John's phone.
Okay.
All of the updates have been free for iOS, and I expect that to be the same thing for the next version.
Mm-hmm.
But here is the crazy news. Apple, last time they did an iOS update, had well over 90% participation updating within the first 6 months. That blows everybody for every operating system out of the water for adoption. Now, what that'll mean is this will be the largest single user base adoption of an operating system ever. It will change more things for more people faster. And it's also the first operating system to completely suspend the metaphor of trying to make people understand how to use an operating system based on analogs to our normal work life or, you know, kind of our antiquated work life, like using a desktop or using folders or having a microphone look like a microphone or having a trash can look like a trash can.
The scale morphism.
Yeah, they've basically thrown all of that out because I think Apple thinks, and I think they're right, that, you know, we're used to digital devices. We don't need, you know, green felt to know that we're playing games. We don't need a microphone to look like one from the 30s to know that we just have to talk to it. I think that will be the biggest event, even though I think everybody's looking for the hardware. But the biggest news really is the adoption of iOS 7 and how that goes.
Well, let's break that down for the listeners. So if you have an iPhone 4S, if you have an iPhone 5, you'll be able to download this iOS 7 for free.
Likely. We don't actually know that for sure. It seems probably. Likely that it's going to
be
like
free. Yeah, like you said, it has
been. If you want adoption, that's what you're going to do.
Right.
If you want those 90% numbers.
On the hardware side, probably a 5S sounds like. It will, like the new iPhone won't be completely transformed. The shell, the shape will still look the same. There's talk of we've talked about this on the show before, kind of the what's the word I'm looking for? You can fingerprint, basically.
Yeah, the biosecurity possibly being built in. That seems
so
more and
more
likely.
Based on your fingerprint.
Yeah, so what that means is that instead of having to lock your phone using a 4-digit code, you'll lock your phone using your fingerprint.
And then a lot of rumors on this kind of gold champagne-colored
iPhone. I think that seems pretty likely. It's not a huge departure. It allows them to add, you know, another option but still keep their you know, metal and glass theme going, which is important for them right now.
And then on the cheap iPhone, I mean, I think the strategy there is, well, we even talked about this on the show before. You have your daughter technically has an iPhone, which she believes is an iPod Touch.
Right, exactly.
And so, but you don't have a data plan on it, right? Are you able to add a cell phone for?
Yeah, you just add, you know, with Verizon or basically anybody else, you know, you just.
And so I'm not a parent, but I know people are, you know, it's always a issue at what age do you give your child a phone, but this cheaper phone is basically an iPod Touch, but if they need to make calls or, you know, an emergency or need a
for
ride
me,
home.
I need to know where she is or I want to know where she is. I've used that function a lot for not just my daughter, but, you know, I told a story last time about how I recovered my wife's phone using that feature. I think that's going to be more and more important. You know, we talk a lot about Big Brother and people watching you and knowing all the things about it. But, you know, I think the reverse
of Big Daddy.
Yeah, I think the reverse of that is more true.
Who's
that
your daddy?
People are willing to give up some sort of personal information in order to do things like find out where your daughter is when you can't find her. I know that I'd be happy to open up my entire life if it meant that I could make sure my daughter was safe. I mean, there just wouldn't be any secret in my life that, and I think I'm not the only person that feels this way, that,
sure.
that wouldn't be totally, I'd give it up so I know my daughter was safe or so I could, you know, make sure and talk my mother into how to travel from A to B. I mean, those are way more important to me than my social security number.
So you're using the where's my phone, basically, type function to find out where your daughter is. So that's how you're doing that. Can you actually turn on any sort of camera or microphone or anything remotely?
You know, there are lots of apps that will allow you to do that. I've not done that because I don't really have a need to.
Yeah.
I can't think of a situation that I'd want to. But having said that, a year from now, there might be the exact type of thing. This is what I have done with my mother. I've turned FaceTime on and talked her through how to hook up how to turn her television on and record something using the DVR.
Sure.
And
so you're asking for interaction on the other device.
Exactly.
And then so there isn't maybe that privacy.
Yeah, I'm not doing it on my own. Yeah, for sure. And
right.
And I think without installing some software and you know, doing some setup, unless you're an accomplished hacker, I don't think you can do that off the bat. But, you know, I mean, those exploits will be available. But that's the trade-off, in my opinion.
Well, and the legitimate, if we can use that word, use of that is your device is stolen. You turn the thing on and record your supposed thief, you know, using the device.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting to the point. If they put the biosecurity in the phone like they're talking about, if your phone gets
brick.
Yeah, your phone gets stolen, they're not going to be able to sell that really under any circumstance.
You can't.
It just becomes a really expensive paperweight.
Yeah, they're going to be able to part it out, and that's it. And if you part out a device that's worth, you know, $600-$800 and you're getting $60-$70, it's just not worth stealing anymore at that point. More and more. And right
the risk
now,
of getting caught.
I mean,
yeah.
you can brick it remotely, completely at this point, and add biosecurity and just add one more layer of unstealability.
That the whole biosecurity thing is, to me, seems great. I mean, that may be a deal breaker for me on choosing a next device, because I've got that on my laptop here. I swipe my fingertip, I
sure.
log in, and everything starts running right from the BIOS.
Yeah.
And incredibly easy. I don't have to sit down and peck out a, you know, something with big characters, little characters, numbers, you know, symbols, all that other stuff. I don't have to figure all that out. I can set that all up ahead of time if I need to override it, but I just swipe my finger. Done.
Yeah. I mean, there's some great, so there's some great tools, some great startups out there building, you know, tools to let us remember our passwords and, you know, one pass and last password. And it's all great, but passwords, I think, are going to be a thing of the past.
I hope so. I mean, you know, I just don't know anybody that is completely satisfied with their password situation, no matter
Agreed.
Whether it's they do a great job or they do no job. I don't think anybody's satisfied with it. You input this, and all of a sudden, I think you're going to get 75-80% of the people satisfied. You know, the people that aren't going to like it are they're going to be the people that don't want the government
because we're seeing
cracking codes
movement outside of just, you know, what I would call the typical tech world. We're seeing it move into our devices like our locks, where you walk up to your home, and if you have a smart lock, it'll unlock because your phone talks to your house lock, and it just opens up, and it'll only open up to you. But if you're at work and you have a maid, or if you have the UPS man dropping off a package, you could remotely unlock the door. They drop it off and then lock it again. So we're starting to see it kind of outside of the tech world, too, in our everyday life.
Yeah.
And getting easier and easier, you know, like the Philips light bulbs
sure.
that I've talked about.
Very cool. Well, we do need to take a quick break. I want to remind folks of the website, facebook.com/techradio. If you'd like to go out and join us there, join the conversation, post a question or a video or something you've seen that makes your life better through this technology or maybe your business. We would love to hear about that there as well and talk about that. And our phone number, 800-524-3604. The lines are open if you'd like to give us a call. Midday, MIDDAY at SDPB.org is the email address. And we will discuss your questions live on the air if you have them via that as well. Coming up next, we'll have more discussions. Please stay tuned. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I want to get back into a conversation that we had last program, and Jeff Litterick was not available to be with us that day. Jeff, I want to talk a little bit about some security news. Maybe it'll dovetail a little bit into our discussion from a few weeks ago. We're going to take that chance, but there was an announcement, or is it news that the government, you know, has come out and said that they can crack encryption now or anything that's out there?
Well, yeah, the government hasn't come out and said it, but the leaked documents from Snowden, if I pronounce his last name right, yep. indicate that, yes, they have from internal memos. It was basically the NSA and the British Secret Service and maybe even New Zealand and some of our closest allies that we've worked with communication inception with for quite a few years. They kind of got together and came up with a plan almost 10 years ago to break all the internet encryption as much as they could.
Sure.
And they did it in a variety of ways. And the impression we get from the memos, they don't say how they did it, but the impression from the memos is that they succeeded in breaking most of the encryption protocols used on the internet as of today. And they did it by a variety of methods. One was just brute force supercomputers, putting new super and bigger, faster supercomputers online. Another facet they used in this whole program was they actually put in spies into these companies to program in back doors to steal the keys, the root keys of the encryption protocol so that they can crack. And then they actually, through both asking and lobbying different tech companies and ISPs and actually doing court orders on them, forced them to put in either backdoors or weaken their encryption standards so that they could break them through brute force supercomputer or other methods they have found. The impression we have right now is almost all encryption used on the internet for network communications has now been broken. That includes your secure SSL to Amazon, you sending a VPN connection, you do Tor, you set up a VPN connection to hide your traffic, all that stuff is broken. What's probably not broken and what's still safe is local encryption, though from the hints of Microsoft and Google, if you're relying on those companies to do the encryption for you, it's probably been broken or have backdoors in them.
So what you're saying, there's two different types of encryption we're talking here. We're talking about the stuff that goes from point to point to, let's say, take your credit card number to a purchase. And then the other type of encryption is what we were kind of talking about on the last show, the stuff that you use to place your files securely on a hard drive locally, you know, basically to scramble that data so that you need to get it back out in a fashion that you can use it.
And the problem we have at this point, knowing if that's safe or not, is that the companies who wrote these encryption protocols were infiltrated and or worked with the NSA to break the encryption as they developed them. So if you're relying on, like, Microsoft BitLocker, we don't know. It could be where that is not valid encryption anymore, where the NSA and the British and a few other select intelligence services across the world could break in. Now, I don't think most people need to worry too much about the NSA and the British looking into their files because they have nothing the NSA wants. And the NSA still has, remember, orders where they cannot look into domestic traffic without a court overview and stuff like that. But they are collecting all the information, and if they do suspect something, this gives them the tools to go in and break all that encryption after the fact and then reread all the comments and files and stuff like that. So... Now, if you've downloaded or used international encryption standards that are probably open source and stuff, you probably have a better chance of having uncrackable encryption that the NSA cannot get because those are peer-reviewed by people outside the NSA, and backdoors and stuff should have been found in them by now. Mm-hmm. But if you're using commercial products, especially American companies, we can't say for sure they've been broken. But from the hints of the memos and all the reporting we've heard so far from the leaked documentation is that most of them have been cracked or compromised in some way that lets the NSA gain access to that information if they need it.
Okay. I want to take a quick break from this discussion. Jim, we got your question about computer viruses, but we didn't get the whole thing. So if you resend that, we will take a crack at that So I guess for me, the conspiracy theory question then, Jeff, is once somebody has it, whether or not it's the NSA or the British or, you know, whoever, how long is it going to be till everybody has it? The next Snowden or the next whatever? Is that the problem?
Well, that is the big problem. The major problem is from what we have from the human, they ran, like I said, three different programs. And one of them was spying, where they put in spies into the companies, actual NSA agents into the companies to write in backdoors or to steal stuff. Those backdoors, either through that mechanism, especially through that mechanism, because no one, not even the company itself knows about them, or the ones where they talk to the company and through court order or the company volunteered in some cases to put in backdoors, those anybody can find. And if once found, that means anybody can use those back doors to break the encryption. The brute force stuff I'm not too worried about unless you have, you know, millions and millions of dollars to build your own supercomputer farms like the NSA does. It's those back doors. Now, even if they stole the root keys to the encryption, unless you could break into the NSA computers or the companies like the NSA did and steal those root keys, that's not a big threat. Because the encryption is still valid, they just got the master keys for it. And as long as the master keys don't get on the internet, we're still good. It's those backdoor things they install that has everyone really worried, because sooner or later those will be found, and once found, then anybody that knows the trick can gain access to all that encrypted information.
Okay.
And that's a lot of banking information, financial. I mean, all the banks and all government, we use VPNs over the network to communicate a lot of data. And if there were backdoors into those protocols and someone got access to, that would be a very bad day for the banking industry fairly quickly.
Yeah, this is fascinating, and we'll have to follow this and maybe talk about it on our next show. October 4th, I believe, is our next program, Dakota Midday. The first Friday in October.
Not till then, huh?
Not till then. I know. We're gonna have to do something in between, maybe a little internet special or something.
Yeah.
Challenge ourselves to have a mid-September tech radio some point in there. But, Jeff, while I have you live and up and mic'd and everything here, I'm going to do something here that I probably shouldn't do, and that is try to interpret this question that I don't know what the question is yet. But we have an email from Jim, and it's a partial one, and it's a problem with yeah, here he comes. He has a Windows XP computer running an up-to-date Bitdefender, and I'm not sure if you are familiar with that. Working for Bit, Jeff, a little pun there. Despite that, I got a computer virus. What kind of software do shops use to clean out viruses, and can a consumer purchase those same programs so I don't have to take my computer to the shop every time I get a virus? So Bitdefender let him down, apparently, Jeff. What does Jim need to do to do this? And this actually does dovetail into the second question I'm going to have for you, but let's take this one first.
The answer is yes, and it kind of depends. If you can determine what type of virus you have, especially a name, like maybe Bitdefender detected it but still let it on, or you suspect the behavior of it, for in the wild, most of the viruses are pretty much the same, and you can do a little bit of research to see what program would be the best. Many viruses have very specific free programs to get rid of, but they only work on a very specific virus. So if you know what virus it is, you can do some research, and you could probably get a free tool. For many of the antivirus companies will release free tools for very specific viruses, but it only works on that virus. The other option is to download freeware, like Malwarebytes is a very famous one, and there's a couple others out there that you can either buy if you want to permanently have or download it and try it, and sometimes they can remove it. The warning I want to give is, while those programs can remove about 95% of all viruses out there, there are some viruses that just cannot be removed without basically tearing the whole machine down to bare metal and rebuilding it. So you could run into one of those. At that case, if you're comfortable rebuilding your machine, you can do it, or you would want to take it to a shop. But actually, for virus cleanup, except for those 5% where you burn the machine down, most of them are pretty easy to get rid of, especially if you can figure out what type of virus it is by a little bit of research. And I would try Malwarebytes and probably AVG, and between those two, it should detect what type of virus, I would hope.
And Malwarebytes is spelled with a Y, correct? B Y T E S.
Malware. Yeah. It's been a while since I had to use it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just saying, in a search, look it up on Google or whatever. But we'll throw a link out on Facebook too for Jim and everybody else. Yeah, B Y T E S. That's a good program. You mentioned AVG, a good free program. Jeff, does this work? If you were to get a nasty whatever it is, can you roll, in this case it's Windows XP or we're talking Windows 7 machine or whatever, can you roll that computer back to a previous state and have it be okay, like a pre-virus date?
Yeah, sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends on the virus, and many of the more nasty and current viruses hook themselves in, so even if you restored, the second you boot, you're reinfected again.
Okay. So that's not a safe option all the time.
No. It is a safe option if you can figure out what type of virus you have and look up and says, do a system restore, because there'll be a lot. Someone wants to say, do a system restore, and you'll be okay. But you really want to confirm that before you do it, because otherwise it may just hide itself, and you may not realize you're still infected for a little while.
Sure.
Another option for the more advanced people to get rid of stuff, especially the deep stuff, is to get the SIS internal tools from Microsoft's website. There's a set of tools called Process Explorer and Auto Runs, which then you can dig down into the driver level and actually enable, disable, and root stuff out that's almost otherwise impossible to get out without a reclone. But that's for the more advanced people, and those tools are free, but you can mess up your system into an unbootable state fairly quickly, so make sure you have backups before you try those tools. But sure. For the more advanced shops and stuff, they may use those tools to get rid of those viruses that I would recommend just recloning on, especially if you don't have data backed up, or you get one of those Trojan viruses where it actually encrypts your data on your hard drive. It's called ransomware.
Yeah, ran across that this week. Something that was a Homeland Security type deal. said, "Hey, you're horribly messed up here. Let us fix this for you. Put your credit card number in." And
there's an FBI one going around that if you do not pay this fine, you will be prosecuted by the federal government.
We found child porn. We found this. We found that on your computer. Yeah, you need to pay this fine. So ransomware, that must be becoming more and more prevalent out there.
Yeah, you have to remember, most of the criminals that do this stuff, this is a for-profit organization effort. There are a few viruses out there that are just made by students and stuff anymore, but most of this stuff is made for profit. People buy the tools that infect your machine, and they pay thousands of dollars for those tools to create botnets and rent out botnets. They want money. And the easiest way to get money is both banking account, credit cards, and or getting you to give you, money through ransomware and stuff like that. It's just like the scams, the old email scams. It's follow the money trail. It's all about the money. And most of the infections you try, the end result is they're trying to get money, either steal your bank online, credit cards, stuff like that. That's what most of those viruses do anymore, or a more direct approach through ransomware.
Yeah, we got a question from Scott just in. He says, you've been talking about internet security on today's show. How concerned should we be about our online banking, 401k, etc.? Are they likely to be hacked? And what protection is offered to recover the money if they are? So I'm assuming the banking industry is putting some big bucks into protection on this. Does Scott need to worry about this today in Sioux Falls right now?
This is kind of fascinating because I just had a big financial conference on financial security stuff with their ISAC. And I can't give it all out, but the banks are being targeted. They're being targeted heavily, and they're being targeted through their customers. You are the weak link in the chain anymore, and the banks do have a lot of protections built in and stuff. There's several different laws depending on how money moves that protects you as a consumer. Mm-hmm. Credit cards, for example, you're always limited to $50 liability, though most credit cards will even make you have that liability. It gets a little bit more problematic in direct wire transfers and checking transfers, like direct deposit, what they call HCH or wire transfers. There's different laws that protect that, if you can get your money back or not. Sometimes you cannot, depending on the bank and the security and what actually happened. But make no mistake, the banks were just hit with a big ATM gift card one for $25 million across the, I think, 21 countries, all within like 6 hours. There were 1,000 individuals in 21 countries using gift cards they had broken on ATM and were stealing people's accounts through wire transfers onto those cards. It is happening, and if you read the news, you will realize banks are getting hit quite a bit. But for the most part, the consumers are protected. The most important thing you have is remember your virus protection. If you do get a virus, first thing you do is, and don't use that computer, is change all your passwords and notify your banks, especially anything relating to money, credit card companies, banks, because that's what most of those viruses are trying to steal. And if you have logged into your banking site, that's a bad day. Will have that. And then there's actually a Trojan out there right now that as soon as you log into your banking, it actually IMs the attacker with your credentials and your secure token if you're using two-factor so that he can get in seconds after you do and break into their account.
I think that's where hackers want to go because that's obviously where money is, where they can do
and
more.
A lot of
but also I think that's...
are really targeted because of the wire transfer and how much easier it is to do wire transfer than credit card stealing. Where one of the new techniques is they'll break into a company business, get into their accountant's computer, and then sit there for like 3 to 4 months and watch all the stuff going back and forth. And then they use that information to attack your customers, not you directly. They never use information directly, so they can't trace it back to the original hack. They use all that information on checks that have been imaged and stuff through the system, through your business, and wire transfers to attack all your customers and drain their accounts. So...
I also think that's where the money and investment in security is going also because they know that's where the hackers are going. So to Scott's question, I would feel safe. I bought a couple computers for our business a couple weeks ago, which obviously was flagged as a large transaction. And Chase called me and said, "Hey, was this you? We just want to confirm." Mm-hmm. It seemed different than your normal transaction history. And I was like, yep, I bought those. Thanks for
it
checking.
It seems like they're becoming more proactive with things like that. Or they'll cancel a credit card and call you and let you know and say, hey, we detected maybe some fraud on your thing. Here's a new card. You know, I guess I see that more and more. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to talk about social media. And that should make you happy. As you sure. do that, like, you do you like 23 and a half hours a day?
John, I just tried to sleep.
Yeah. Well, you just came back from an interesting introspection in social media, and so let's get your take on that, and we're going to talk about local stuff, too. So need to take a quick break, and we come back more from Dakota Midday Tech Radio. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for this Friday, September 6th. Again, we're back on the air October 4th. Please mark it in your calendar to join us then, or if you're just a regular listener at midday, thank you so much. We'll be there for you. Drop us an email. You can send that to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y at sdpb.org, and facebook.com/techradio. We're trying to get a photo up of our miraculous keyboard. We got it. Hey,
there,
that's
yeah.
fantastic. Post a question or a comment there, if you will, please. John, we have not talked social media for quite a while, and there's been several things that I've wanted to talk about, and we just haven't gotten around to doing it. So guess what? It's our day of reckoning here with social media. First off, we have some things coming up locally. Let's get that out first, because
we don't want to
short that at the end of the show.
Yeah, we partnered up with an organization called the Enterprise Institute, which is based in Brookings and also has a presence in Sioux Falls. And I highly recommend we're putting on a conference called the Innovation Expo, and it's 2 weeks, not less than 2 weeks. It's September 17th. That's a Tuesday. So it's about a week and a half away, and it's downtown at the Orpheum Theater. It's all day from 8 to 5, just a one-day event.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are interested in entrepreneurship, in venture capital, fundraising, innovation, starting your own company, something like that, it's definitely an event for you. It's a great value. It's a $50 for the whole day event with lunch included. And we have some great speakers. We have speakers from, we have a couple local Sioux Falls, but also Chicago, San Francisco, New York. People who have started companies, some who are investors in companies, some who have exited in their companies, and some who have raised multi-millions of dollars for mm-hmm. their companies. So it's going to be a really interesting event. It's actually the 10th year that the Enterprise Institute has put on this event. So it's kind of their 10th anniversary. We've been helping just the last 2 years. But I think it'll be a lot of fun. You can get more information at sdinnovationexpo.com, sdinnovationexpo.com, or okay. you can find it on Facebook.
September 17th.
Yep.
And did
still get tickets.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we will – let's put a link out there.
Yeah, I'll do that.
In the social medias and take care of that. Again, I wanted to kind of go over a few things, business related with social media, because there's been much ballyhoo about brand promotion and use of should I be on Vine or should I be on Twitter? When does a company
sure.
start a YouTube page? Or so let's maybe delve into that a little bit and talk about the triggers for maybe some of these events for a company, for a small company or a medium-sized company, somebody starting to think about mm-hmm. opening a company or starting
sure.
being an entrepreneur. What do you just try to do everything at once, or do you ease into this?
Well, that's a good point. I think the everything at once is probably the worst strategy. If you're trying to proliferate and do weapons of mass destruction on social media to be on every single network, you're not going to be able to keep up. Keeping up on social media is drinking from the fire hose analogy.
Yeah.
So I think it's like marketing 101 or messaging 101. We need to talk about who's your audience and where are they. So, we have a lot more data about these social networks now today. So, for instance, the fastest growing demographic on Facebook is women 50+. But now we're starting to hear reports come out of teenagers are saying they're not using Facebook. Their friends don't use it. They just don't spend time on it.
Right.
So, who is your audience? Is your product targeted towards 16, 17, 18-year-olds? Or is your buyer 55-year-old women? So I think that's part of, obviously if you want to cast a wide net, volume is on Facebook, then Twitter would be number two, YouTube obviously. But there are more niche networks now, things like Vine or Instagram. Well, Instagram is not niche. It's pretty large now.
Mm-hmm.
Or even Snapchat. So different, you're seeing different types of audiences on different networks. And so you really have to think about who you're talking to.
Vine is this, you'd share a 6-second video
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. So
yeah, you make little 6 second
snap,
videos.
Snap video.
Yeah, on loop almost. They almost like GIFs. They repeat every 6 seconds.
Yeah,
and it's incredible. Some people are making amazing art. Almost, I would really call it art in 6 seconds. You see, there's one guy who gets a lot of revines, which are like retweets, who he plays. He's got the camera kind of horizontal, and he's plucking a guitar, like stringing a 6 second melody, and he hits the last note, which is the first note on the 6 second point, and it loops.
Sure, it loops. And, yeah. So businesses are taking a hold of this and marketing to a group of people using that specific.
Yeah, great account to follow on Vine if you're curious of an application for businesses. GE, actually, General Electric, they do little six second scientific experiments, how to make quicksand and with like household ingredients or making a volcano. And they make these little 6 second videos, which are incredible. So if your business or your product can somehow be enhanced through sound and pictures and video, Vine is something to consider. I would even make the case, and listeners are going to think I'm crazy, that Snapchat is an interesting platform. I know everyone is just thinking that teenagers are using this for other activities, and maybe they are, maybe they aren't. That can be debated, but it's an interesting platform in the sense of it's a network where you capture attention for 10 seconds or less. The user knows that this image is only going to exist in their lifetime for a handful of seconds. So what other marketing platform do we capture attention? You know, we're all fighting for 5, 10, 15 seconds of attention if you think of TV, commercial, radio.
Sure.
Snapchat, you get it because it disappears. And so I don't know what the right... I haven't seen a lot of brands using it yet, but it's an interesting platform. I don't think that I'm not saying that you should jump on it into the Sioux Falls business because there's a lot of users yet, but it's something to think about it and maybe don't always judge a book by its cover when it comes to some of these new social networks.
Okay. Well, again, a call for questions if you have a question or comment or are thinking about.
We had one on the Facebook page. I think Joel took
it. Yeah, I'm in the middle of answering right now. I'll just say
Doug.
It. Yeah, he says, how safe is the Google Chrome browser feature that remembers your password? And I've just typed this big, long paragraph that I'll just paraphrase here. I think any product that remembers your password and autofills it is only as safe as the device itself. So that means that if you are the kind of person that uses your computer in a coffee shop or at school with a shared internet connection or maybe with a couple of roommates that have friends over that you don't know or whatever, if it's kind of semi-public, it's probably not the best idea to let that password be auto-filled, especially if the computer itself is a public thing or semi-public, like your roommate or a friend or somebody might use it. I don't think it's the best idea to let anything auto-fill. However, if your connection is pretty safe, like you have a good password on your Wi-Fi network or a great password, And you know all the people that might use your computer, I think that's as safe as you could really expect. It's certainly as safe as typing it in yourself for the most part. So I would just check out the backside, the where you use it and how you use it, because there are programs that can kind of scour a network transfer, meaning a password that's inputted in a public place, and then take that data, unencrypt it, and then use that. That doesn't happen a lot. It's unlikely that it would happen in a case that Doug might be in. But, you know, better to be safe than sorry. If you're going to use it publicly, probably don't let it autofill. I don't like autofilling on my phone for things like banking and whatever. So I usually turn that off just because I think that's safer. But at home, I do that all the time.
Yeah, I do it for things like Twitter.
Yeah.
And Facebook. I wouldn't do it for my Wells
Although you
Fargo,
might watch out but... for Facebook and Twitter, you know. More and more people are getting a hold of Facebook and Twitter accounts and posting things that, you know, if Twitter, you know, so if you're like John and you use Twitter or Facebook as part of your business, you know, it could
sure.
a couple of bad posts could make a lot of hay.
One thing I'll add, because he asked just about Chrome stores those passwords in a very easily. In fact, you can go to a page inside Chrome and see all the passwords that have ever been stored in plain text. And Chrome can sync across computers. While it's safe on the network, do be aware of who has physical access to your computers. Anyone with physical access can basically bring up a page in the browser that will list every password in its unencrypted form. So,
okay.
That is something to be aware of with Chrome itself.
Good point. Getting back to this thing about the access to the business accounts of Facebook and Twitter and things, is it Kenneth Cole that's having a little to-do right now in the Twitterverse? He tweeted out some fashion things and used the hashtag boots on the ground
to
talk about his upcoming collection of course boots, but he's getting a lot of blowback on that. I'm not saying that somebody did it surreptitiously, but this was definitely a planned thing. But so how is this wrecking businesses choosing the wrong things to tweet? Have you seen that?
Well, you certainly need to have a strategy, a plan. You know, first you figure out what your brand and your voice is. What's the tone that you're going to come out with your tweets? I think Kenneth Cole has promoted something during the Cairo protests back in 2011. So he's made a mistake before. I shouldn't say that brand probably. I'm sure there's someone running his account. But yeah, you got to be smart about what you're going to say. I mean, this is a public domain, right? And this lives out in the internet ether. So yeah, there's been a lot of dumb mistakes. You had the account, you had the situation where McDonald's got hacked and they started, or was it Burger King that got hacked? I'm trying to remember which one. They imitated the other one and started sending kind of nasty tweets. And then most recently, a brand got caught admitting that they fake hacked their account because they got McDonald's or I believe Burger King. I should check it out.
I was actually just going to say that, you know, a lot of this, the any press is good press. I think we'll probably see a lot more of that type of behavior where you might be faking.
It was Chipotle. Yeah. Chipotle pretended that their Twitter account got hacked, sending and they added 4,000 followers that day when they, you know, because it people start following it because all of a sudden it becomes almost like a comedy routine. And these brands are tweeting these things they would never tweet. But I mean, the internet is really big on transparency. And so when something like this comes out that, okay, yeah, we faked it, then they're going to end up hurting much more than they helped.
And this is, you know, something like that is going to be an advertising firm or somebody that's going to be carrying that campaign out for them. That isn't an intern at Chipotle just deciding he's going to do that day.
No. Yeah, that was something. So it was Burger King was the one that got hacked, and they changed their avatar to like a McDonald's picture, and all these people started following it. But yeah, I mean, it's those type of, you know, we can go back to the Super Bowl. We talk about Oreo when last Super Bowl we had the blackout, right? When the stadium went dark.
Yeah.
And they posted that picture of you can eat Oreos in the dark type of that little ad campaign. And that's where you have a big brand with a supporting ad agency on call to respond. And that in the moment thing in 2013 was considered so fresh and so new and so innovative.
Okay.
I think in the future, that'll just be the norm.
Yeah. As long as you don't put your foot in the mouth, it's all fun and games, you know. While you're, you know, until your company goes out of business, until you get hacked or something.
So
I don't
pull
know.
A Paula Deen or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or something. So we have a few minutes left in the show, and I wanted to go over a couple of maybe they're not such new social media type programs, but let's go a little bit deeper here. We want to talk about a couple of programs that might help companies. There's one called Buffer. And what you want to mention.
Yeah, a couple of little tools you can use. Buffer is a great tool, bufferapp.com, BUFFERAPP. We can put these links in Facebook.
Yeah.
It's an app that helps you schedule your social media posts. So if you do have a strategy and you're ready to schedule your posts throughout the week, you can pick a specific time, or you can just put them in your Buffer queue, and Buffer will determine at what point you should release them, meaning when maybe the most people are online
really.
Yeah, so they have an algorithm. They have an algorithm that, you know, Twitter has a different time where people are using Twitter as opposed to Facebook, as opposed to LinkedIn.
John, what's an algorithm?
Oh, gosh. You want me to explain an algorithm?
Well, just can you give us could anybody give us an overview? I mean, I know what it is, but there might be people that don't know
what
that
means.
Can a program be smart enough to know when the majority of people are online?
That's precisely what an algorithm might be.
Yeah, so an algorithm, you're using mathematics and computer science basically to put together a bunch of inputs that'll determine. Oh, I got to explain algorithm as the music.
Yeah, sorry. Next show,
it's
algorithms.
A really smart thing.
We won't get to mention, but we'll put a link in there as
sure.
well. We want to talk
Check
about
out Buffer.
That,
but... It's a great way to schedule your post.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you so much, Joel Brovelite, for joining us today. John T. Meyer from Nine Clouds. We'll hopefully see you on September 17th.
Yeah, I'd love to see you there.
At the Orpheum in downtown Sioux Falls. And from BIT, Jeff Litterix, thank you so much for joining us today. Reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, the MP3 version of the show will be on our podcast as well as on the website soon. Hit that at sdpb.org. Click on Listen and explore all the marvelous things that South Dakota Public Broadcasting Radio has for you. Join us again October 4th. Stay tuned to SDPB Radio. NPR News is next, followed by Talk of the Nation, Science Friday.